we all want to leave a legacy. We want our time on this planet to count for something, to mean something. I remember years ago doing a sermon on a related subject and using the poem about the footsteps in the sands of time and being criticized for choosing the poem, but it's true. We leave footprints and sometimes feel a little discouraged that they will wash away or blow away because nothing is eternal, and we often think in legacies with great grandiosity about it has to be world-transforming or it means nothing. I don't believe that at all. I believe that each of us creates a legacy, and we do it unintentionally and unconsciously, or we can do it with some mindfulness of what we are doing, of how our lives and our values are connecting and corresponding. I studied, you may know, with Viktor Frankl in Vienna, and Viktor Frankl was the psychoanalyst who, because of his experience in the death camps during World War II, saw suffering, saw anxiety, saw death, saw spiritual death, and saw recovery. And he came to the conclusion that our great drive, our greatest drive, was not, as Freud believed, for pleasure or Adler for power, but for meaning, for our lives to mean something, to illuminate something, to make some kind of difference in the world. In order to have a legacy and build a legacy, you have to first build a legacy. You have to do something. You have to somehow examine our own values and try to make them line up with our actions. And our legacies do not have to be monumental. It is not a question of if you have not cured cancer, you have left no legacy. If you have not left a mighty monument out of marble, you have not made a legacy. I believe that some of the most moving words I've ever read were from Mother Teresa, who said, "I don't do great things. I do small things with great love." And when we pay attention to our values, when we pay attention to our beautiful but broken world, and engage it trying to make a difference, trying to bring about just a little bit of healing, bring just a smile occasionally to someone's face, to give some relief to someone who is in distress, then we create part of our legacy. We all leave moral wills, ethical wills, that is, the examples that we have set. We are not, as individuals, and we are not, as a religious community, only our words. Now, I understand the irony that I make my living, such as it is, with words, so I'm not putting down words. But words need to lead to action, at least from time to time. The words that we speak, the affirmations, the confessions, the statements of purpose, the things that we tell our children and tell each other, have to, at least occasionally, manifest in what we do and how we are in the world. Our children learn who we are partially from our words, but mostly from what we do. They learn what they live. One of the first pieces of learning I remember my son made was the house in his room was particularly messy one day, and he was about 3 years old, and we said, "Adam, clean up your room." And he said, "Who's coming over?" We had clearly taught him that neatness and orderliness were a function to show the outside world and not the inside world, and that little epiphany that he handed me changed the way we were, and we got much more compulsive about cleaning up even when no one was coming. and being ethical even when no one was watching. That we try to make these things fit together, at least occasionally. No one is perfect, and you can't beat yourself up over every failure, but life is a continuing struggle to align examined values with our actions. Words mean something, absolutely, but words are like a single cell, and the actions are the second cell, and when you put the two cells together, you get a battery, you turn the flashlight on, and that's when you get the light, when we align those things, not simply out of habit, but because we believe in it, and we try to act our beliefs. Here in this community, this religious community, we try to model with ritual and with substance in the ritual what our values are. Every Sunday, our children bring food over here as part of our religious service. The food has every bit the same caloric value if you collect it out in the narthex in the lobby. But by moving it in, we create a kind of sacrament. We show our children and each other that as a community, we are not simply for ourselves. We model for our children and each other that out of our own limited means, we contribute to something outside the walls of this religious community. Every year, and when we pass out the UUSC Service Committee boxes that go on the tables, and children put their pennies or nickels or dimes or quarters in, they are taking part in a ritual, but ritual that is a reminder of how to be in the world. Too often in too many religious traditions, ritual is a replacement for righteousness. Oh, well, I went to services and I did all the things you're supposed to do. I kneeled, I stood, I sang, I crossed, I question marked, I did all of the various sorts of things you're supposed to do to be religious. Rituals are not replacements, they're reminders. And when we can combine a reminding ritual with one of substance, as we do with the food basket and with the UUSC collection boxes, we magnify and concretize and manifest our values in actions that are reminders of our connection with each other. As Unitarian Universalists, we believe that we have tremendous responsibilities to each other and to this beautiful, often broken and sometimes limping world, that we have a responsibility to reach within ourselves to participate in a greater effort. Every year at about this time, or exactly this time, this congregation goes through its every member canvas, our budget drive. We change the name from time to time. But the truth is that we are every year asking our members and friends to look inside at our values and try to line our values up with how we spend our time and how we spend our money. And when we're asking people to look inside and to dig deep, it isn't for the aesthetics of money. It isn't that we have some tremendous edifice complex that we want to build a bigger, glassier tower somewhere. It is that we believe that this community does real things for real people in real time. That we offer hands down to each other when one has fallen and needs help getting up, and that we can reach up when we are down with a sense of confidence that someone will be there to help us up and to hold us when we're feeling down. We come together with a sense of the strength of what it means to be together. The analogy that I often use and that I think Dale was alluding to is in terms of music. As I famously cannot carry a tune, but when I stand around the choir, they can guide and correct and change dissonance to harmony. That our individual voices, sometimes small, sometimes loud and off-key, sometimes changing key with a callous disregard for what the composer's intent was, we create out of that seeming cacophony music. And the same thing is true with our financial contributions. When we are raising money, we're not raising money, we're raising program. We're lighting the lights in the sanctuary. We're having a minister of music and a choir and a bell choir and a children's choir. We're having religious education. We are sunshine and songs and social action and involvement in the world. We are the battery that charges each other up to engage this world. This is an important organization. This is an important community that does real things for real people in real time. Inside this room, inside this campus, and in our local community, and indeed through service committee and other efforts with the world. We do small things with great love. For me personally, you are such an important part of my life. This is part, and a very important part, of my legacy. For over 20 years, I've been with you. I've worked with you. I have worshipped, and I have wept with you, and mourned, and danced, and celebrated. When I came to this group, this was during one of the down times. This group had not had been large at one point, then small, then tiny, but there was a saving remnant that kept the lights on so that there were a few people to say, come on and let's see if we can do something together. And indeed, as Dale said, my one precondition was we had to have religious education. And they said, but how can we? We don't have children. And I encouraged them, almost all of them older than I am now, to go home and get children. And that did not seem to be a workable plan outside of biblical miracle time. Sarah was past the age of women, and Abraham was 98. But that didn't seem like it was going to work. But we took a chance to have a program. And indeed, you built it, and they came. This is the nature of legacy. I found something here. I didn't create this ex nihilo out of nothing. I picked up a torch and advanced it with you to a certain place, and now it's time to pass that torch on to another generation, to a full-time minister, to a full-time ministry, to have this congregation grow to become the unique congregation that it can and it will become. At every turning point, at every crisis point, at every choice point, we, and I put myself in the we, and I will continue to put myself in the we of all of us together, look at the impediments and said, you know, if we dream it, if we believe in it, if we buy into our vision, we will make it happen. And we did that. We created a religious education community. We created a music community. We created, it's waxed and waned, and right now it is waxing magnificently, social action and social involvement, where we really are a light in this community. We started out downstairs and moved to that room next door, then moved into this sanctuary. We have, at every choice point and crisis point, we met together and said, we can take the next step. And this congregation, over this past year, has met in several meetings, will continue to meet, to talk about how to take that next step. It starts with looking in. It starts with asking ourselves, because no one is selling you something that you don't want. We're not competing with other charities. We're not competing with cancer funds. We're not competing with ecology groups or political parties. This is not a charity, even if you get a deduction. This is a cooperative to which every person here belongs in some way or another, whether you've signed the book or not. And so the great question and our great assumption is Socratic, that human beings do good, choose the right thing most of the time when given good information. Here's the good information. Here's the good news. We are at another change point. And our fate is, as always, being limited, we understand, by San Andreas, in our own hands. That what we choose to do, how we choose to concretize our values in program, will be an important part of our legacy together. I want you to know that I care deeply about taking this next step. And I care deeply about that next step succeeding. I know that no community and no effort and not even marble lasts forever. But what we do here, what we choose here, how we hold each other's hearts and lives in our hands and in our hearts, how we do all of this makes a difference. Just as the power of our individual voices is transformed from cacophony into music, into something powerful, so the contributions that we make to this community is much more than we can accomplish alone with our own charities. We are the battery. Together, we create the energy that recharges each other to engage this beautiful and broken world. We have been doing this together, we have been growing, and now there's a time of handing that baton off, and let's do it together with joy, with enthusiasm, with a little bit of fear and trembling because we are on the fault line, but with confidence that what we choose will make a difference. We have already made such a difference, such a good difference to the larger community and to each other. And it has been a joy and an honor to be a part of your journey and to accompany you this far. We are in this together from before yesterday to well beyond tomorrow.